Hello, innovators. I'm Todd Wyant, and welcome to the Bridging the Gap podcast presented by Applied Software Great Tech Group. You're invited to join our conversation to model the future of construction innovation and the digital transformation adventure of this great industry. We recorded this conversation live from the Advancing Prefabrication Show in Denver, Colorado. In this conversation, I sat down with Dr. Christopher Traw of Colonial Web to discuss the latest in prefab trends, how to bring manufacturing principles into construction, the need to focus on people, and much more. Hope you enjoy the conversation. All right, we are here at Advancing Prefab in Denver, talking with Chris. Thanks for coming on and joining the show today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those who don't know you, can you kind of give a little bit about your prefab journey and why you're here at Advancing Prefab?
Sure. So for me, I've been in manufacturing for 25 plus years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, born and raised an industrial engineer, got my MBA, my doctorate in business. And, you know, a couple of years ago, somebody approached me about an opportunity to join the construction world and try to instill the principles of lean manufacturing, continuous improvement to a prefabrication operation, right? So I've been spending my last 6 years with Colonial Web building up our prefab operation.
Mm-hmm. Nice. What was it about the construction world that kind of enticed you to come over and bring in the manufacturing principles?
Sure. I mean, honestly, when I came in, I was scared to death, right? And I don't know anything about construction at that point. Yeah. I know process, I know flow, but nothing about construction. So it was, you know, part one, it was intriguing to me to get into something that I've never done, right? Mm-hmm. Just immerse myself. The other piece of it was, you know, I love working with people. I love working with new people. And to be able to take the 20 plus years of experience I had at the time and bring that to a realm that didn't really understand manufacturing, right? Mm-hmm. We're a construction company. We're not a manufacturer.
Right.
So being able to bring those principles and start to, you know, to look at productization and modularization of everything we're doing was something that was really intriguing to me.
Yeah. What were some of the learning curves that were unexpected?
There's a lot of, you know, if you think of like a disc profile,
yeah,
there's a lot of high Ds in the construction world.
Yeah.
Everybody's got the, you know, everybody knows the right thing to do and it's their way.
Right.
So, you know, when you talk about change management and culture, that was one of the I think big surprises.
Yeah.
What I was blessed with, however, is a company who cares first about people and safety. Mm-hmm. You know, people come before anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was extremely new to me.
So one of the things that has come up in conversation here so far this week is, you know, taking those manufacturing principles that you have your controlled environment, you mm-hmm. are, you know, working on a similar thing every single time. And how do you bring that into the more complex world of construction?
Sure.
How do you approach that challenge?
So, you know, I just mentioned people and it's really about the people. Mm-hmm. So who are the experts of building whatever we're building under a roof, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it be off-site construction, prefab, modular production, it's the guys that are building, right? Mm-hmm. It's the every single one of our teammates that are on that floor producing product, mm-hmm. right? So that, you know, the key for me was engaging the team. The team was a big part of, you know, the rebuild of what we did. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you know, at the time, there's certain things that are similar, you know, like pipe welding or, you know, assembling different types of structures or skids. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the sheet metal world of HVAC was something completely new to me. So where do we start? We start with the flow. Okay. What are our key value streams in sheet metal? So you got a coil line and then we have everything else, right? The fittings, the welded type of duct, So it was, you know, identifying what the value streams were in sheet metal, just for the example, mm-hmm. Following those value streams through from beginning to end, and then trying to reorder and reorganize the shop to follow that flow. Once we understood the flow, then that's when the teammates come in and say, we say, okay, so what is it that you do today that you hate? You know, what's your pain in the butt?
Yeah.
Right. And then we start getting rid of those pain in the butts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in engaging the team, more ideas come to light. We change what we can change. And then, you know, we celebrate all of our wins, celebrate our losses too. But that's the gist of it.
Yeah. Anyway. So walk me through some of the change management that you had to go through, or was there a big kind of cultural mindset shift that needed to take place to focus on the flow? And
if I didn't have the management team that I had mm-hmm. in place before I got there, mm-hmm. I don't think we would have been successful. Mm-hmm. Right. We have a management team that believes in people, believes in continuously improving, believes in that there's got to be a better way than we did it today. Right. When I first started, there were times where we've got roughly 90,000 square foot of space. Mm-hmm. So when you can't move in any of that space and your aisles are completely swamped with product, there's only so much of that you can take where you just throw in the, you know, you're throwing in the towel and say, right. I can't take this anymore. We got to do something different. So I think I came in at a time where the whole team was ready for a change. Mm. So
that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, well, what if we try this, you know, even though it's completely odd, this could be the dumbest thing in the world. You know, guys, what if we just for the day, let's try doing something this way. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, you can go back to the way you did it yesterday or the way you were doing it today. Right. So there was a lot of that, you know, thinking about what ifs, mm-hmm. you know, if nobody's going to come after you for screwing up, which we don't, you know, we don't, right? We got to celebrate when we screw up and figure out ways to make it better in the future. You know, if nobody's coming after you and there's no, I guess, negative consequence, what would you do? Mm-hmm. Right. And there was a lot of that kind of conversation with the team, mm-hmm. All, you know, from the floor all the way up through my managers in the shop. So that was what helped.
Did you see that conversation start to kind of grow and snowball as people were like, oh, they're actually kind of following through on this action. Let's give more ideas.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the naysayers are always my favorite just in general, because this is never going to work. This is never going to work. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, once something works, oh man, I've wanted to do this for 10 years mm-hmm. and we're finally doing it, you know? So it's like a backhanded compliment in a sense, right? Once you get those guys on board, once you get that team on board, you're set.
Yeah. Right? They become your biggest champions.
Absolutely.
Once you get them over. It's a hard bar to get over, but
absolutely. Some of it's transactional in nature at the start for some people, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, everybody's a little different, right? You've got somebody who may not want to conform at all. Well, you have to do it this way this week, mm-hmm. or there might be a negative consequence. Right. But most people aren't going to do that. Most people are willing to change, willing to try something new, willing to try to get out of the, excuse me, the headache and the monotony of the every single day mm-hmm. that they have. Right. Mm-hmm. If there's a better way to do it, let's figure it out.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to the people aspect of it too, that if they know that you have their best interests at heart and you're really trying to help eliminate those pain points for them mm-hmm. and you're taking action to do that, then mm-hmm. they're going to trust you more and
Absolutely.
Be willing to try new things, even if it seems weird and funny at first.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the other things to start too was, right, you end up getting a laundry list. Mm-hmm. Every single person will, you know, I've got a team of roughly right now 80 guys. So if I have 80 guys come to me, each of them are going to have at least a couple ideas. You're not going to do 240 things or, you know, 160 things, whatever it may be in total overnight. So for each of the teams, you know, we took some of it to a vote. Some of it was, yes, we need to try this, right, from a management perspective. Mm-hmm. But you try things, right? And you get the team, this is the master list. Mm-hmm. This is where we feel we should go. Mm-hmm. Today, let's go with the implementation of these items. What do you think? You know, if there's something that you are extremely passionate about that we need to move up, we'll move it up the list. But you know, there's a lot of transparency, a lot of communication, and I think the transparency piece is also something that maybe guys aren't always used to, right? From all of the different areas.
Sure.
The industry is struggling with a communication problem and a lack of interoperability. This is causing 25% of data being recreated and almost $300 billion loss due to bad communication. Great Tech Group believes that is a problem. So they created Data Connect, an easy-to-use, no-code platform that connects critical ERP systems with cost management to form a single source of truth to empower better communication, decision-making, and project efficiency, delivering the ultimate business outcome of being on time and on budget. Visit ASTI.com/DataConnect to start saving time and money.
Yeah, that's a huge trust building right there with the transparency. Kind of shifting it into prefab, let's focus in on that for a little bit. What trends do you see coming into the industry with prefab?
In my short time, right? I'm roughly 6 years in now to the prefab world. I'm seeing data centers in general just seem to be the wave at present, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot more work on the mission critical front, especially in our area, right? Being close to the lines that are connecting Europe and in the United States. You know, when we're looking at prefab, we're, you know, okay, multi-trade racks, you know, how do we better do these types of things? How do we, you know, we built skids forever. How do we get to a point where we can standardize and say, these are the skid, right? Package it. Mm-hmm. Instead of every skid being a specialty, build the skid a specific way. And then maybe there's, you know, certain components that are allowed to shift. Mm-hmm. But modular just also seems to be growing beyond anything.
Yeah.
And we're prepared for it, but we're not quite there yet, right? We're not putting panels on our skids or any of our any of our products right now, but that's a step that we're looking at for the future as well.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the productization side of things, what challenges do you see facing the industry?
I think for us, when it comes to productization, we've got to think about how do we define productization? Mm-hmm. Like for us, from a sheet metal perspective, right? We don't build any standard sheet metal. You know, obviously you have your straight pieces going through the coil line fittings. At some point you have different sizes doing, you know, all of it looks the same.
Yeah.
But it's how deep do you want to dive from a productization perspective? Like for a sheet metal world, for our productization, it's the type of sheet metal we're making, right? Whether it be welded, lined, unlined, straight, or fitting.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we've got our five categories, and we're not going to go lower than that from a productization perspective, because it just doesn't make sense for what we do.
Sure.
When we go into the skid world, we'll break out skids from, whether it be a pump skid or a heat exchange skid, water cooling skid, whatever it may be. our, I think our next piece that we're really looking at is those, you know, identifying from the types of skids we're making, looking at the, like one individual line of those as a, okay, how do we productize this type of skid, right? So that's where we're at really from that perspective.
Do you see the industry starting to embrace the concept more and more, or is it still,
I think from a concept perspective, a lot of companies are looking at flow. They're trying to look at what make, how does it make sense to move things through our shop? The big, word that's being used now is no, we won't do that. Right. It's, we can't do it this way, but we can do it this way and we can give it to you on this day. Yeah. Right. We can't clog our shop floors with product that's not moving just because it gets dropped in, you know, because it's emergency. We have value streams in which we can move those products in order to complete something timely. However, the process is different, right? Yeah. And that's the, that's something that's sometimes difficult for guys that haven't seen it all the time is, what do you mean no? Well, I'm not saying no. I'm saying I can do it, but I can't do it the way you asked me.
Yeah, it's going to look different.
It's going to look a little different, but you're going to get it when you need it.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing that once you develop the trust from that perspective, it helps as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah, absolutely. What technology trends do you see coming in to kind of help in the prefab world?
Sure. I mean, one of the items that we've embraced over the last couple of years is robotic welding.
Okay.
You know, we actually purchased a Novarc SWR 2 years ago.
Okay.
You know, I don't have a large amount of space for my pipe shop at present, right? Mm-hmm. That's changing as we speak. Mm-hmm. We're going through some expansion, but
nice.
I have a small blueprint and I need output that's essentially equivalent or better than what we have today, and I need a good ROI, mm-hmm. right? You know, and Novarc gave me that nice. From that perspective. You know, one of the challenges, I guess, as I talk through this, is every company you talk to has a different way they track and look at their information, mm-hmm. right? For me, like in sheet metal, we talk pounds per hour, but we talk all in pounds per hour. And we don't only talk all in pounds per hour, by the way, it's all sub-assembled. Right. Some companies will look at your sheet metal as, okay, well, I'm getting 50 pounds an hour, or 60 pounds an hour. Well, okay. But are you sub-assembling? Are you doing this, this, and this? And then when the answers come back of no, you know, we're actually, just for the conversation for us today. So we're apples to apples for anything I say, you know, sheet metal, we look at the all-in labor to complete whatever it is we have to build for a specific spool, mm-hmm. right? So the plasma cutting, the TDF, the pits, the corners, whatever it may be, plus the assembly and the sub-assembly of all of the duct, mm-hmm. plus the hours to actually push that into a box truck or, you know, a trailer or a flatbed, right. whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were... Gosh, 6 years ago, we were at like 22 pounds an hour, where today we're pushing our average as 32 pounds per hour, right?
Awesome.
And if we're not sub-assembling, then the number's astronomically larger, right?
Yeah.
You know, with our pipe world, where we simplified it. We do the same thing from an hours and or from a labor perspective and a productivity perspective. However, you know, it's all in, mm-hmm. Including the load of items onto a trailer. But, you know, if we have a 12 inch piece of pipe that has one weld in it, you know, root fill cap, it's a 12 inch all in weld. So all of the labor plus those 12 inches mm-hmm. are what we're looking at for our inches per hour. So, you know, some people will multiply by pi, or, you know, also multiply out by three because you're doing three passes or however many passes, but We don't look at it that way, right?
Yeah.
Big number is not always a sexy number. We're looking for that down and dirty, you know, what's our all in? Mm-hmm. So we can try to start looking at ways to try to improve, you know, where we have, you know, say we have four manual welding cells that are pushing out anywhere from 90 to 100 inches per day. Mm-hmm. And then we have a robot that's capable of, we've hit 300 to 400 inches per day. But that translates from an inches per hour perspective to about 4 inches an hour. So, you know, when prior to having a robot and having the flow and efficiencies that we have today, I mean, we were at, I think it was like 1.7 inches per hour about 6 years ago. From process improvement, we probably were up to about 2.5 inches per hour, and we're sitting at 4 inches per hour today, right? Mm. So, we're definitely doing the right things. We're seeing the benefit. We're getting a lot larger pipe projects versus what we ever saw in the past. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's definitely a trend. What's interesting, I was just thinking in my mind, we've had, you know, with data center projects a couple of years ago, a few of the larger companies that are building the data centers, I'm not going to name names, they switched from for like their ECH chill water systems. They moved to a plastic, right, material. Mm-hmm. So all of suddenly there's no more carbon steel or stainless steel. It's all plastic and copper. Now, so we finished that, and now we're starting to see that the trend is moving back to carbon steel, right? So, yeah. You know, I've already booked out my welding department for the year, and we're looking at ways to try to even grow that further, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we have to add a second shift. Maybe it's a space constraint that we can, you know, if we can add space quickly, mm-hmm. we'll do it. But some of the things that we're fighting through right now from that perspective.
Yeah, very cool. Well, bringing it back to the advancing prefab show. Yeah. So you're leading one of the tracks. What are some of the things that are popping up in conversations?
You know, one of the most interesting things, you know, we're all in the business. Well, if we're not, we all should be in the business of developing people right now. Mm-hmm. Right. The construction world, just like everyone else, we've got a shortage of people.
Right.
Right. So we're bringing in less skilled people. We can't expect them to be able to do the same job right away, mm-hmm. right? We have to be willing to train. We have to be willing to bring those individuals up. Mm-hmm. And if they're not right for what they're doing now, we got to find the place where they do fit in,
right?
Right? Because you're not going to find them somewhere else. It's very difficult to do it. So where I was going with that is a lot of the conversation, we're in track five, so it's manufacturing and prefabrication shops, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the broad title. But one of the common themes yesterday was the building up of people and trying to find ways to simplify what we do today so less skilled labor can do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll come back just real quick with robotic welding. You're not putting your expert welder on a robotic welder, right? You're putting a guy who's just learning to weld, or may not even be sure if they're interested to weld, but maybe they love playing video games. You're sitting there with a joystick all day, you know, playing around with a TV screen,
yeah.
right? Forget about the product on the other side. But, you know, the common theme is really about people to me, and trying to, you know, not necessarily always just the guys on the shop floor, but, you know, the guys in the field, the technologies that we're talking about with trying to look at data and, you know, make, be more transparent in what we're doing, how we're doing, where is this product? Where is, you know, where's my spool of this? Is it even started in the shop? Is it on its way to the field? Has it been installed in the field? You know, all of that information help somebody, mm-hmm. right? Make somebody's life a little easier mm-hmm. instead of having to do it manually. You know, we talked about incentivizing and motivating teams mm-hmm. quite a bit. So, but it's really about people right now.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. So as we start to land the plane in the conversation, a couple of rapid fire questions for you.
Sure.
What is the phrase modeling the future? What does that look like to you?
Ooh. So if I think about it from my specific needs perspective right now in the manufacturing world, it's getting more space to do what we need to do. Mm-hmm. It's finding ways to, you know, better true up our estimates for jobs to what we're actually doing in the shop environment. Mm-hmm. And utilizing technologies to bridge gaps.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Bonus points for bringing in the name of the podcast into it. I like it.
Gotcha.
What does innovation mean to you?
Doing something better than you did today or yesterday. You know, innovation can be the smallest thing in the world. I mean, when you think of flow, if one person has to move something from their left to right, back to their left, then to the middle, right? Mm-hmm. Well, why do we have to do all that moving? Mm-hmm. If innovation could be something as simple as fixing that. So, okay, we're always in the center. So, you know, maybe it's mm-hmm. putting parts behind somebody so they can actually, you know, get what they need and always stay focused in one spot. Mm-hmm. You know, it can always also go to that drastic extreme of implementing technologies. You know, one thing I think of with robotic welding, because it's something I've asked every single manufacturer right now, when you talk innovation, how long is it going to be? You know, AI is a huge thing right now, mm-hmm. right? And it's not going away. We're eventually going to say, why do we do this? And it's going to be like the Terminator or something, it feels like, right? But, you know, with AI and robots and the amount of stuff that we scan, well, how far away are we from a point where we can, you know, that robot actually go, you put your piece in, that's maybe has five welds. Mm-hmm. You're not telling the system anything. The robot actually moves around the entire part, scans it, finds every single one of those welds, and is able to actually perform, you know, self-perform every single one of those welds. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something we haven't seen yet that is on the verge of, I've got to believe that all of these guys are working on something like that. You know, that'd be a huge innovation for the welding world. It could be something as small as changing, you know, the smallest thing for something for someone every day, or going to that extreme of seeing something that we've never seen before.
Yeah, totally agree. So how do people connect with you and find out more information?
So the easiest way to find out about what we're doing is to go to our website. It's colonialweb.com. You can also check out what we're doing in manufacturing. You can see me, check out my LinkedIn, Dr. Christopher Traw. You could also, go to our Colonial Web LinkedIn, our Facebook pages.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, final question for you. If I could give you all construction power, you could snap your fingers and innovate one thing. What would you pick to innovate?
Find a way to bring the people that we need to help with work, or the guys in the trades, mm-hmm. to somehow be able to better build the programs up and the communication up of what the trades really are, mm-hmm. to the kids in high school right now, or like even middle school. I mean, it's the industry dies if we don't have the people to, you know, mm-hmm. to pick up the slack. So, I mean, if we got all the money in the world, then let's build out a school or something for, you know, all these kids to learn more about the trades and actually start performing some of those functions, early, you know, in their high school careers, and see mm-hmm. what it's really about. I mean, you know, I grew up in an age of, you know, my mom was a teacher. My grandfather was a superintendent. My grandmother was a teacher. Her, you know, my mom's sister, when she finished, she was a superintendent. So, you know, a lot of schooling on my mom's side of the family, right? Mm-hmm. My dad was in supply chain his entire career, most of it with Rockwell Automations. Mm-hmm. So, I didn't really know much about the trades.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, right now a kid can come out of the trade school and they're making at minimum 26, 27 bucks an hour. You're going into the trade program at 18, 19 bucks an hour. Yeah. College isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, it was for me. It's all I knew, but, it's not for everybody. And for the amount of money, you can make in the trades, we need a way for these kids to really understand. Mm-hmm. It's a true path for the future.
Yeah. So. I 100% agree with that. I'll try not to get on my soapbox with that right now.
That's right.
I preach, you know, I think that's awesome. Yeah, I think there's a huge marketing problem with the next generation for construction of absolutely. Telling what's actually happening here in the space, and that there's so many more opportunities. There's so much more cool technology in construction than what people think and give it credit for. It's not the, you know, the stereotypical backwoods, you know, construction of 50 years ago. Right. A lot has changed. And I think we need to get that message out a whole lot more to younger generations for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time and joining the show today.
And now it's time for my Todd takes from this episode. First take. At its heart, construction is a people business. Enhancing efficiency and productivity starts with a focus on the people involved from the ground up. Second take. Cultivate trust within teams and projects by establishing feedback loops, ensuring transparency, and taking visible action on identified pain points. Final take. To attract the next generation of the construction industry, it's crucial that we better communicate our stories and successes to those outside our field, showcasing the opportunities and innovation within. Bridging the Gap is hosted, directed, and produced by Todd Wyant. Edited and produced by Eric Daniel. Bridging the Gap is an Applied Software Great Tech Group production. Copyright Applied Software Great Tech Group 2024.